This is the Cine Snob Podcast.
Hi, welcome to episode 224 of the Cine Snob Podcast. I'm Jared Kingery.
I'm Cody Viafania.
Cody, it's been a while since we did a show.
As Stained once said.
I hear they're big Let's Go Brandon guys now.
Well, Aaron Lewis is. I don't know about the rest of the band, but...
Are they even the same, like, guys still? Is it still like...
I don't know.
You know how these bands do, where it's,
I mean,
like,
they only recently reunited for, like, summer festivals and stuff, so...
Didn't Aaron Lewis do some country stuff, too?
Yeah, that's what he does now, and, yeah, known for that kind of thing. I think he told, I think... There was some story about him performing, I think maybe in Corpus or something like that, and heard people speaking Spanish and said that, you know, that people speak American.
Oh, boy. Well, you know. But hey, we're back after, it's been like 3 weeks or so since we last did a show. Mm-hmm. You spent some time in New York, I know.
I did.
How was that?
It was cool. I got to do a number of different things. Didn't stick to a... I did sort of like the midway tourist thing where I didn't do like Statue of Liberty or Empire State Building, but I did go to a Seth Meyers TV taping.
How was that?
It was cool. I had great seats. I was on the front row, like behind the camera.
Okay.
Like a camera well kind of area, so there was no one blocking. I had like a straight shot at the stage, and that was cool. And just to watch the whole thing unfold like a well-oiled machine was crazy. Those people at NBC don't fuck around. Just like down from the pages and the line stuff to the show itself.
Well, I saw Conan twice when it was still taping at Warner Brothers, and it was. You know, they tape it as live, so it's like a total of 1 hour, like start to finish. Like, I guess unless they have to edit something. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a super well-oiled machine. And we were right behind the cameras, too. Like, we were on the front row. I don't know if, I guess maybe this one sits a little higher. Is it is it one of the old late-night studios?
I don't know. So it's in the studio right next to the SNL studio, actually.
Okay.
I'm trying to see who else was shooting in that studio previously.
Because I know, like, Conan's old studio, the old Late Night with Conan O'Brien studio, like, it went to, Dr. Oz taped there after the show, after Late Night was over. And then I think they took the studio back. I don't know if they took it back for the Tonight Show.
Yeah, so this previously held the Rosie O'Donnell Show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I think it was vacant prior to that.
Really? That'd be a long time.
That's what it says on the TV taping studios overview website.
Hmm. They don't have a plaque outside. They do that. They did on the Warner Brothers lot. They had a plaque of everything that taped there.
No, but it was there. It was cool. Like walking through. Cause I mean, like you can't have your camera or anything as you're walking through the halls and stuff. And, you know, no bathrooms either on, like, you're not allowed to go to the bathroom on that floor. But, like, you walk by and you'll see, I walked by, like, the SNL, like, wigs and costumes department and stuff. So, it was cool.
Yeah, when we went to Warner Brothers, you could walk, you, like, just see the Criminal Minds set, like, through a soundstage door. Like, oh, cool. Yeah. Did you have Sbarro pizza? Great New York pizza?
No. I kept to the classics, the New York style, local stuff. I did go to Alamo Drafthouse Brooklyn, though.
Oh, really?
Which was surprising. I guess it's not too surprising, but like really captured like the Drafthouse feeling and vibe and everything. And it was actually pretty cool.
I've seen a lot of events going on there recently. Mm-hmm. Like it's a flagship location. So,
yeah.
Did you, how long were you there?
Like 10 days.
No, no Broadway, nothing like that.
I did. I went to David Byrne's American Utopia.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I remember you seeing you did that. How was that live after seeing the,
yeah, it was amazing.
HBO.
Yeah, it was great, and I've listened to that show like on Spotify and stuff, and it was incredible. I'm trying to think of what else I did of note. I went to a Knicks game, Madison Square Garden. So I went to Madison Square Garden for the first time.
Was it Nick? Who was it? Knicks and
Toronto.
Oh yeah. Who gives a shit? Who won? That
one? Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, I think that those are the major like event highlights of stuff that I did. Yeah.
Yeah, I went to St. Louis for work, which is St. Louis. Even the people that live there are like, eh, it's St. Louis. Illinois is right across the river. But I got to go to my first major league hockey game.
Yeah.
Went to a Blues. It was the Blues and the Colorado Avalanche. The Blues were like 5-0 going into it, and then they lost that night.
Mm.
But had the nice club level where you get to go just walk up and get free beer and free food. And
it's the best.
It rules so much. It's like I'm just eating nachos in the middle of the stadium by myself with no one else I know in the middle of St. Louis watching a hockey game.
So I went recently over the summer to the new Rangers, the Texas Rangers field. And and like the first night I went with a couple friends of mine, and we had like this like club level, like, but by the field, and underneath, if you go under, it's like free beer, free alcohol, free food buffet. And then we liked it so much that we got tickets the next day for that same area. And then on day three, we decided to just get like regular seats, and it was the worst. I will never go back to that place. Like standing in line for 15 minutes versus just like walking right up to a bartender or walking right up to like really good food with no lines or anything like that. I just can't. I will never go to that stadium again and not pay an extra $50 to sit.
Oh, it's only $50. That's not bad.
I mean, it's built into the ticket price. So, like, if you just buy some more expensive tickets, it comes with unlimited food and drinks and booze and there was one. They even had a thing on the app and you didn't even have to do anything. You just put your seat number in, and you could order like hot dogs, popcorn, beer, and nachos, and they would just bring it down to your seat.
Yeah, that's awesome. There was like a woman handing out beers in the section there. Well, it's funny. One of the dudes that was there in the seats, because there were three of us here from there in St. Louis from Austin that were going to go to the game, and then the other two guys flaked out, didn't want to go. So I ended up going, and one of the younger guys that works at the company there in St. Louis went, and I was talking to him, and I didn't realize how big a thing hockey was in St. Louis.
Sure.
Which I don't know why. I guess I don't picture it as wintry as somewhere else. But he and his dad like had season tickets that they split like four ways with like cousins and uncles and stuff. He kept getting beer, the free beer, and like walking it over to his dad across the stadium.
That's pretty great.
And then one thing that made me laugh too, in the club level, like right next to where you went for the food, like the lounge, there was a souvenir shop, but it only sold like really expensive coats. Like it was like $200 Blues, like windbreakers.
Nice. Like,
oh, they're really targeting the, cause it's like right on the suite level too. So, and then I saw like they were wheeling a cake cart around to like the suite. It was cool. I didn't get any cake, but
yeah. Well, it's the benefit of knowing people in high places, because I think in both of our experiences we're describing, they were like company seats.
Yeah, it's for the clients.
Yeah.
Did I ever tell you the one time I went to the Alamo Dome? A buddy of mine who I worked with years ago at the TV station, his boss gave him some tickets, and they were pretty good seats behind the basket at the Alamo Dome for the Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
And we also had access to the restaurant. And this is me, like, just schlubby old me, and my buddy is, like, a death metal musician, like, tall guy, like, big, long ponytail, big beard, and both of us Spurs fans, so we had access to the restaurant, and it was, like, a buffet. It was at the very, very top of the Alamo Dome, top level, and it was a buffet, but they had a waiter too.
Mm-hmm.
And both of us, like, we just fucking pigged out on food. And then at the end, we're like, are we supposed to tip this guy? Because, like, neither of us had any cash because we came to this free. And I think we left him, like, $2. Probably, like, they know when, like, the riffraff comes in. Like, oh, yeah. Someone gave these motherfuckers some tickets.
Well, it's always funny to me being in, like, because I've done that at hockey games before in Dallas with my same friends. And like, you can tell the people, like, we all come in wearing jerseys and everyone else is in, like, you know, nice clothes and stuff. And, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The free tickets are, it's always the best. It's always the best to do.
Yep, yep.
All right, anything else before we move on? I think we've recapped enough.
No, I think we can get into it.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to reviews.
Here are this week's reviews.
First up, we have Eternals.
Look where we are!
Evening, ladies.
Watch out!
Who is it?
Here we are, the third film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe's Phase 4, featuring some previously unseen heroes, the Eternals, that have been around for 7,000 years, living with humanity, a whole bunch of spacey, weird stuff. From director, Oscar-winning director Chloe Zhao, who won Best Director Oscar earlier this year for Nomadland. Lots of stuff being made about her being the director of this movie, the first Oscar winner to direct a Marvel movie. Cody, tell us about Eternals and what you thought of it.
Sure. So, yeah, like you said, you know, it had come out a while back that Chloe Zhao was going to direct this movie prior to her winning the Oscar, obviously. The movie had been filmed. You know, a lot of people were very interested to see what would happen, especially because this is the first thing that she's made since winning the Oscar. And so, you know, you get Marvel kind of expanding, you know, this Phase 4 is going a little bit beyond, you know, established superheroes. It's introducing, you know, new, you know, I think getting into a tier of character that probably only appeals to comic fans, at least on the surface, like being aware of them. I don't know if I've ever heard any general public person, not a comic book reader, that has heard of the Eternals.
I was looking at something, some other article about the movie the other day, and there's only been 45 issues of an Eternals comic book in the last 45 years. So it's not exactly burning up the market. So this is some weird, like, 70s, really kind of trippy drug shit from Jack Kirby.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's really about this superhero team that are sort of like these immortal people who are sent to basically fight an evil race of people or whatever, monsters, whatever you want to call them, called Deviants. And they're protecting people from Deviants, but they're not allowed to interfere in like human affairs or human issues, which explains why they were not around with Thanos. It also, in painstaking detail, shows how they were not interfering in a number of different human rights or even historical stopping conflicts.
Yeah, they're not stopping atrocities either.
Right, right. And so, you know, So the movie, you know, kind of jumps back and forth, and not in too much, because it's more of like little vignettes that show different moments of human history, of destruction and atrocities, where the Eternals were kind of watching and not acting, and the sort of impact it has on them over the course of thousands of years. And so it kind of focuses on a couple of main characters, in particular Gemma Chan, who plays Cersei, and Richard Madden, who plays a character called Icarus. It kind of talks about the team sort of reassembling after being apart for about 500 years. And then I think that's about the extent of which I'll go into it to avoid spoilery stuff. But, you know, given that I just gave that explanation, you could see how perhaps maybe the movie might be bogged down with story, and it is. The film contains so much exposition, and so much exposition through dialogue, where I feel like they explain the concepts of Eternals and Deviants like 1,000 times. Like, I feel like like they just go over what's going on so much. And I think the biggest sin that this movie commits is being extremely boring. And I thought that it was like relatively dull and boring, and in really bogged down, like I said, in these minute details of, you know, the history of these beings that spans like 7,000 years. And so there's a lot of ground to cover, I guess. You know, the other piece of it is that it's very moody, but not in the way that, like, you know, it's very, I would say it's akin, it's probably the closest thing Marvel has come to making like a DC movie, honestly.
Because it does
carry that moodiness of a Zack Snyder movie, where every character is just fucking miserable throughout the whole thing. Nobody's having any fun save for Kumail Nanjiani's character, Kingo, who I think is probably the best part of the movie. Mm-hmm. Especially his interactions between him, and he has like a valet played by Harish Patel, who I think is probably the best character in the movie, period.
Those two are the only bright spot of the movie, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're both having a lot of fun, and Kumail is really great. And to their credit, they do, you know, When you hire these comedic actors in these parts, you know, I think my biggest problem with Ant-Man was that they didn't let Paul Rudd be Paul Rudd.
Until
the second movie. And I think this movie really succeeds in letting Kumail be Kumail, which I think is why you get a guy like that. You know, I can't fault any of the performances, which I think are good across the board. I would also say, too, another bright spot would be Brian Tyree Henry. I don't know that his character is written the best, but I feel like he's very good in it. And I think he's also having a little bit of fun. Not his character is not, but he, the actor, is. But mostly it's these mopey characters. The story is just so bizarrely told in that, like, I don't know what's going on with Angelina Jolie's character throughout this. She's in some kind of, like, trance for half of the movie. Like Kumail Nanjiani, the most interesting character, is just not there in the entire third act of the film.
that's a major, major issue that I was going to bring up. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, and I'll let you talk about that a little bit more. And, you know, a lot is being made, too, about, you know, Chloe Zhao has this really great visual style that's very similar to, like, Terrence Malick, where, you know, it's a lot of natural light, it's a lot of lingering shots. If you saw Nomadland, that movie looks gorgeous. It's even better in The Rider, her film prior to that. But here it just doesn't do anything, because there's so much CGI plastered all over everything. So, like, the beauty of the shots gets a little lost in that. And also, it just feels weird that, like, every significant battle sequence happens on, like, an empty beach as the sun is setting.
it's just all magic hour lighting. Yeah.
It's all magic. And, like, so, like, every battle happens at magic hour, and it's always on an empty beach somewhere. And so, like I said, I just think it commits the sin of being boring. And I think some of the action sequences are cool. I think that there's a character who's Makari, played by Lauren Ridloff, who has one of the better, like, super speed kind of character, like, action sequences, who I think looks really cool. I think that you know, there's some other stuff too that I think looks interesting. I think that like the Gilgamesh stuff looks cool. I think that I like the sort of Superman-ish take that Icarus is, and I think that that character looks cool. But there's just not enough of it, and it's not enough to cut through what's ultimately a really boring story. And I think the ending is really convoluted. I think that there's some character pieces, bits that happen with Icarus that don't really make a lot of sense. He seems to be tortured, but only by way of writing and not by like actual character design. So I think that, you know, the movie is just undone by what I think is a pretty weak script. And again, like I said, going through human history and showing those things, they could have done that once or twice, but they do it like 10 times. And it's just, they just hammer the point home until it's nothing. So it's a disappointing affair. And it is for me, at least, the least fun Marvel movie that I can remember.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to agree with you on everything. I think the biggest, like you said, the biggest sin it commits is it's boring. And I think that one of the major problems it has is there's too much happening. There's way, way too many characters. There's, I believe, am I right, 10, like, named Eternals?
Mm-hmm. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah. So, you know, you've
11, actually, if you count, Selma Hayek.
Oh, yeah. So you've got these... You've got these characters that you're supposed to, and you make a good point in the DC thing, and I've seen this comparison a lot. This is kind of the way DC tried to reverse engineer the Marvel formula, whereas you have this movie like Justice League where you throw all these characters that you've never met before into the mix and try to give them all compelling backstories, and I think no one gets it. I don't think anyone comes out of this with a deeper sense of character other than Kumail Nanjiani, who has a great sort of mid movie thing where he had spent, you know, the last 100 years as a Bollywood star, like as his grandfather and father and himself. It's a funny bit. But I think all the rest of the Eternals have no real connection to humanity. They're only told, like, you're told that they love humanity, right? That they've come to nurture humanity, and you don't really ever see that, I don't think.
I agree with you. Yeah,
and the other thing is, like, the movie never touches on what it would be like to be that sort of immortal. You know, you've got this, you know, 5,000 years that's that of screen time that's spanned, or at least it's like 7,000 years, I think, because they show up in like 5,000 BC. So the passages of time for these people would be like, it would, the humanity aspect of it would be like the blink of an eye to them. You know, it'd be like a day that someone's entire lifespan would be a day to them, you know, in that mindset. So there's a funny bit, like at the end of the movie, one of the post credit scenes, where, like, they go out to look for more Eternals, and they're like, we've been looking for 6 weeks. We haven't found anything. Like, you motherfuckers have been alive and on Earth for 7,000 years. 6 weeks is nothing. You know, and then the... I'm trying to talk about this without spoiling it. But there's... Like you mentioned, Kumail Nanjiani's character, the best character in the movie, frankly, is absent for the third act of the movie. Just because he's like, you know what, fuck this, I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
And then shows up again after the climax, like nothing happened. Which is a weird choice to make. There's also a character played by Kit Harington, who has a pretty big role in the first act and then disappears almost entirely, except for something to set up a future installment of the MCU. So, man, I don't know. This thing is just it's a big mess because nothing really connects.
Yeah.
You know, that, like you mentioned, the Icarus stuff is, you know, it's only told in the script. It's not really demonstrated on screen. And then, go ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to say, the one thing I didn't mention, but while we're talking about character, I also don't love the sprite arc at all.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah. That character, there's a couple of characters, Sprite and then Barry Keoghan's Druig, who have very muddled arcs that do things that are pretty kind of like crossing the line into villainy,
mm-hmm.
but that get redemption at the end that seems unearned. One last thing that I'll say is this is probably the most disappointing thing about this is the disappointing thing about it being a bad movie is that it's clearly the one that's striving to be the most diverse mm-hmm. and the most inclusive.
And it is to many degrees.
And you have the first literal, like real on screen. Yeah. Like actually has lines in a character, gay character in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And there's the same sex kiss. And like, but by then the movie just stinks already. So it's great that it's progressive enough to finally get there, you know, 20 fucking three movies in, but it sucks that it has to be this boring turd of a movie. I've seen a lot of, what will I call it? Like praise for Chloe Zhao in spite of the fact that it's a bad movie. And I feel like that's letting her off the hook a little too easily. Cause she also has a weirdly two screenwriting credits on this movie. So this is her thing through and through. And whether or not she was able to work within the Marvel system is up for debate, but this is a real stinker that's all her. And I don't take glee in saying that, but I mean, it is, I don't think you can separate the director from the final product in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else before we grade this thing?
No, I think we've covered it pretty
thoroughly. Just, it's a really, really big disappointment. But what's your grade for Eternals?
Yeah, well, I mean, it would be disingenuous for me to say it's the worst Marvel movie. You know, we have another podcast, ReMCU, where we've been going through the movies. And I don't think that it reaches the lows of something like the Edward Norton Hulk movie, which is just hot garbage. It's disappointing, and it is definitely low tier Marvel. It's probably in the bottom five. I'm going to give it a C.
I'm going to go C minus. I was a little more disappointed with it than you were, I guess. I don't know. I mean, this is definitely like this is definitely the bottom tier of the Marvel movies. I don't know that it's a bigger disappointment though than something like Age of Ultron. Hulk, Incredible Hulk, I can take or leave. I don't really give a shit. It was a stepping stone. But like Age of Ultron is a pretty spectacular misfire. And I think this is probably along those same lines.
Well, I think the thing about it is that it's a misfire in that the talent in front of and behind the camera should have led to more. But yeah. I do think that this would be a really relatively easy film to cut bait from and never mention again, And so for that reason, I don't think that the stakes are super high story wise and what Marvel's doing on a greater level. But given the caliber of filmmaker that made it, it's surprisingly inept.
And you know, it's a lot of the criticism I've seen is this should have been a Disney Plus show. Like this would have been served better in a limited series fashion. And I don't disagree.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our next movie, Finch.
You see, I'm developing something interesting. Giant leap of faith. Now, if you can speak, tell me something about you.
Robots must protect dog.
If we don't go before that storm hits, we'll die, all of us. As soon as you can walk, we're leaving.
One, two, one, two, one.
Now that's falling.
One, two.
Head west, over the mountains.
Would you like me to drive?
Don't oversteer.
That's oversteering.
Ease your foot up just a hair. Perfect. Hey, what's all the fuss?
I learned to talk dog. I don't think it likes me.
Come and see this.
Try the RV down. Hang on to something.
I believe this is the second movie in a row for Tom Hanks to go straight to Apple TV Plus after Greyhound. Yeah. Was there anything in between that?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Yeah, I would have to look to confirm that, but I don't think so.
So anyway, this is an Apple TV Plus film starring Tom Hanks as Finch. You can see it's sort of a post-apocalyptic.
News of the World was in between.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Post-apocalyptic, I don't know what you call it, a drama. He builds a robot. Cody, tell us about Finch. What you thought of it?
Yeah, pretty, very simple plot, where, you know, Tom Hanks is playing, a guy who's, it's post-apocalyptic. I think it was like a solar flare ruined the ozone layer. And so, caused radiation issues too. And so basically he's sick. And he has a dog and he's building a robot to basically teach the robot how to take care of his dog, for when he dies. And that's basically the sort of plot, which sounds super depressing. But it's the movie itself, I don't think is, and I kind of struggled a little bit with this movie because for me, it's almost good. And I think it ultimately fails in a few different areas. So the robot is a motion capture performance and voiced by Caleb Landry Jones, who is a great actor who's been, I think, really doing a lot of great, surprising work over the last 5 years or so. And I think that, you know, the voice acting is good and it's well done. And Tom Hanks, you know, always good. I don't recall ever seeing Tom Hanks not being great in anything. But I think where things start failing a little bit in this movie, I think really early on when I think that I just thought it was corny. I just think that a lot of the movie is super corny. I think that a lot of the humor is like dumb, clumsy robot humor that feels very slapsticky and corny. And then the movie gets really serious in the middle, and I think it's for me a little bit confusing. Like, I don't know that they ever. So the two of them and the dog kind of find themselves in peril in the middle of the movie, and I don't really understand what's going on there. Like they're being followed by someone, and I don't really get the extent of what's going on there.
Well, I mean, it's a post-apocalyptic thing, so you can assume it's going to be bad.
Sure, but also they're followed for seemingly a very long time, and so I don't know. But sure. Anyway, I think the movie also loses its premise a little bit, and I think it's, you know, it's set up to be like, hey, Tom Hanks has this really deep connection with this dog, and it's about saving the dog, and really it becomes about his relationship with the robot. And I think the dog stuff kind of gets a little bit left on the back burner for a little while, which is okay, but I think it kind of sort of fails the premise in that way, kind of halfway to three quarters of the way into the movie. I chuckled maybe once or twice, but I think a lot of the humor is, like, again, like I said, really corny. And then I think it gets a little bit too heartstringy, pulley, towards the final act of the movie. So, like I said, I think it's almost good, but for me, there was just something that felt a little bit, maudlin to me about it that just didn't quite connect.
I'm going to disagree a little bit. I agree that it's corny. I don't know that it ever gets maudlin. I think it probably, if anything, to me, plays it a little too safe. Like, there is some darkness implied. Like you mentioned, the whoever it is that follows them across the desert for whatever length of time it's supposed to be. as some sort of threat. But I just feel like there's a, like I said, a darkness missing there that's kind of lingering around the edges. We were watching this movie earlier today. And my wife was like, "So does he want to protect the dog because people would probably eat it?" I was like, "I don't know, that probably." But then that never comes up. It's just, you know, protect the dog, which I get is enough. Usually of a premise. This is going to sound stupid and weird, but I think they made the dog too much of a dick. Because the dog is not very nice. Like, the dog is not, like, this isn't a dog that, like, the dog takes a while to warm up to the robot named Jeff eventually. And I think it's played kind of mean to some extent at some point, but I don't know. I do agree with you, though, in that it's almost good. I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's too maudlin or anything. I just think it's missing something. And I think probably one of the big things is, well, is he the only robot now? Like, is he the first robot that was built like this? You know, what's, because there's an interest, it ends very interestingly to me. I'm not going to spoil the ending, but it ends in a way that I'm like, well, this is, now I want to see more of this, what's happening now.
Right.
I don't know. It's a fun little distraction, I think. I don't think it's too anything. I think that there's corniness about it for sure. There's maybe a little too much focus on kind of the goofy robot stuff for a little while, but I think ultimately it's fine. I think the motion capture performance, the robot, the effects are great. It's a really, really well done special effect. But yeah, I think it is missing something, but I don't think it torpedoes the movie too much. Anyway, what's your grade for Finch, Cody?
Yeah, I just don't think that it quite makes it for me. I'm giving it a C+.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a B-. I think it's fine enough. I think it's a nice little distraction, I think. as much as a movie about the apocalypse or post-apocalypse can be a distraction. But that is available on Apple TV Plus right now. Okay, let's move on to our next movie, Spencer.
Waiting for you. Everything. They don't.
I didn't get to see this, Cody. I ran out of time to watch the screener that was sent to me, but you did. This is the story of Diana Spencer, who, of course, later became Princess Diana. Kristen Stewart plays Diana, getting a lot of praise. Tell us about Spencer and what you thought of it.
Yeah, so it's an interesting film in that it is it's not like a straight up biopic. It's sort of like a it's like fictionalized, right? So it's it's sort of like a fictionalized account of what they believe may have happened, like filled in the gaps. But also, what one thing that you're probably seeing a lot is that it sort of takes on the tone of a bit of like a psychological horror/thriller kind of movie. Kind of mm-hmm. thing. And so it's from director Pablo Larraín, who I don't know if you saw Jackie.
I did.
Was similar to that a little bit, mm-hmm. where it was kind of like there was a lot of unsettling stuff. And for me, that movie didn't really do it for me. I wasn't a huge fan of Jackie, and I think I'm sort of on this in the same boat with Spencer, where again, this it just not for me, I don't think. You know, it does have that sort of uncomfortable feeling that's the psychological thriller part of things. But for me, I thought that the movie was pretty one note, where it is very much this sort of like woman on the brink, like becoming overwhelmed by the things going on around her, and it sort of by its nature becomes repetitive, because you know she continues to be pressured and pushed in directions, and she's starting to fall apart, and she's under a ton of scrutiny, and she's being watched all the time, and you know she's not really able to be herself, and then it's just that over and over and over again for me. And so I didn't find the nuance there that I think a lot of people are. As far as Kristen Stewart goes, I think that she's good, but something about the accent feels a bit put on. I actually saw someone tweet that the accent feeling fake like adds to the horror of it all, which I think is not a compliment to admit that the accent sounds a little fake. She's been, in my opinion, I think Kristen Stewart's a really great actress, and I don't think that this is the best I've seen her. Not to diminish her performance here, but I think that she's been better in other movies. I don't really have a ton to say about it other than, you know, I think there's a lot of like lingering shots and lingering scene, like long scenes of like meals being prepared and stuff like that. And for me, like I said, I just think it's a bit repetitive and one note. Once you realize what the movie's trying to show you, I don't think it ever really strays far from that.
Cool. What's your grade for Spencer?
I'm going to give Spencer a C+. C+. Like I said, not really for me.
All right, let's move on to our last movie, Language Lessons.
Hola.
I'm sorry, who are you? What are you doing in my house?
Surprise! You're so dead.
You are such a drama queen.
I'm mad. I want you.
No! You can get away.
Who are you again?
I'm your Spanish teacher.
So I have to speak Spanish for one day.
Well, I actually bought the 100 lesson package.
Will, did you buy me 100 Spanish lessons?
Yeah.
Why?
Because you wanted to learn Spanish, dummy.
Oh.
Buenos días, Adam.
Yo no sé tu nombre.
Oh. Todo el mundo me dice cariño. Como in Dirty Dancing, how everybody just calls baby, baby.
Ah.
I stalked your social media.
What?
I found out that it was your birthday, so ready, 1, 2, 3, here we go. Cumpleaños feliz. Cumpleaños a ti.
So this was an audience award winner at South by Southwest this year. Is that where you saw it the first time?
It is, yeah.
And this is from Natalie Morales directed this, correct?
She did, yeah.
So this is her second film in a year after Plan B.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see this either. Tell us about Language Lessons and what you thought of it, Cody. I know, yes. You love Mark Duplass, so.
Yes, I am noted Mark Duplass stan. So it is Natalie Morales' second movie. It's actually, I believe she finished this one because I think that in the breaks of Plan B, when that was filming, she went off and made this movie. I don't know the real sequence of events here, but again, very simple premise. As you saw from the trailer there, Mark Duplass, his husband surprises him on his birthday with 100 Spanish lessons because he's been wanting to learn. Natalie Morales is the teacher, and then a little bit into the movie, something kind of tragic happens, and the two of them start to form a bond, a very platonic bond, with one another, as they kind of help each other through these kind of traumatic experiences in their life. Save for Host, the horror movie that we watched last year, this is for me the best usage of pandemic era filmmaking techniques, where the entire movie is over Zoom. In this one as well. And it's just such a great usage of it because it doesn't necessarily rely on Zoom as a crutch. You know, when you're watching when you're watching something like Host, and not that this is a bad thing about Host, but, you know, it's the Zoom platform. Like, you see Zoom on the screen. It's not just, like, you know, the boxes and stuff like that. Here, it's just the boxes. You don't see, like, a video platform. So it's less distracting and makes it feel a little bit more immersive, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But it is very similar to the Mark Duplass Brothers style of filmmaking, where the film is entirely improvised and
mumblecore, right?
It is mumblecore, yeah. Mm. And I was reading an interview that said that Mark Duplass said that this movie is the least amount of, like, prep they had ever done for a movie. So, like, a lot of times there's, like, an outline and maybe some story points, and then they just improvise around that. And I think they had very little to work with. And what you get is this, like, really great, enjoyable, you know, moving story that is essentially like a platonic love story that unfolds. And they're both really great in it. I I'm a huge fan of Mark Duplass as an actor. I think he's supremely underrated. But one thing that he does in this movie that's, like, crazy is that he's improvising in Spanish, right? So, like, I would say at least half the movie is in Spanish. And this movie actually started because Mark Duplass was taking Spanish lessons over, like, quarantine and learning Spanish. And so he, like, I think the story goes that he called up Natalie Morales and asked if she spoke Spanish. And then they kind of crafted this story together. And so, you know, to have this movie that's entirely improvised, and then on top of it, Mark Duplass is doing it in a language that's not, like, his native language and that he's still learning, I think is great. And it adds his authenticity because, you know, like, when Mark Duplass speaks bad Spanish, like, it'll pop up on the subtitles, like if his tense is wrong or something, they'll put it in, like, quotations and stuff. And then Natalie Morales is really great, super underrated also, you know, hasn't really, I don't think, has been given a great shot at like many lead roles or anything like that, but I think their chemistry is just so fun to watch, and I think it's legitimately moving. I think that there's an event that happens, I would say maybe like 20 minutes into the movie, where if you can go along with it and treat it for what it is, I think if you're on board with, like, the moment of tragedy that happens in the movie, I think you're going to really love what unfolds after that. So for being a pandemic era movie, again, you know, it takes place entirely over screens. I think that it's extremely well done. And like I said, outside of Host, the best usage of that kind of filmmaking. And then, by the way, doesn't ever mention the pandemic either. So,
oh, all right. You know, one thing, I just a quick side note on this. I was watching, I was on a plane, and I tweeted about this, that they were showing, they only had, like, terrible episodes of The Office, like season 8 or whatever. I remember watching The Office back then, and they would always do video calls.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember back then it was such a thing that was, like, so out of the ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no one would ever do a video call. But now, like, it's so prevalent in everything that it would be totally fine. That just made me think of this now. Like, it's just the way that has shifted. Because, like, they'd Skype with whatever, just so you know they could show Kathy Bates on screen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, this could have been a phone call. But, like, now that's totally what we do. Anyway, sorry. That's a dad observation there for you. What's your grade for language lessons, Cody?
Language Lessons is a B+, one of the better movies that's come out so far this year, for sure.
Cool. All right, that's going to do it for this week. Next week, Clifford the Big Red Dog, right?
Yeah, I think that
opens. I've got a screening for Encanto. I don't know when that actually opens, though.
That's not out until the 24th. So next week, Belfast is the big, got a lot of Oscar buzz. Kenneth Branagh-directed movie. Also a couple other things that we could or could not cover. I believe it is also Home Sweet Home Alone.
I got a screener for that yesterday.
Yeah, the Disney Plus Home Alone
with the little fat kid from
Jojo Rabbit.
Are you a big Home Alone fan? I can't remember. I know we've talked about this.
Yeah, I am. I had the tape recorder when I was
a kid. Talk Boy?
Yeah, I had one of those.
Are you looking forward to this?
No, okay. I'm not. Even though there's a lot of funny people involved, I think it's like Rob Delaney and who's the mom in it?
I thought it was Pete Holmes. Isn't Pete Holmes the dad?
No, it's Rob Delaney.
Oh, what am I thinking of?
Ellie Kemper is the mom.
Oh. Okay, Rob Delaney. It's Macaulay. Pete Holmes is in it somewhere. Who is Pete Holmes playing?
He's playing Carol's husband and... Oh, he is playing the father. Who is Rob Delaney playing? Oh, like a stepfather, I think, maybe.
And Kenan Thompson's in it. Chris Timothy Parnell.
Timothy Simons, Andy Daly, Chris Parnell.
Wow. Interesting.
I didn't know that Mikey Day wrote it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, man. Anyway, so... Yeah, we'll watch that.
From the director of Dirty Grandpa, so...
Oh, I never... Wait, was... Yeah, that's the De Niro one, right?
Yes.
Okay. I'm thinking of Bad Grandpa. He's a Borat guy.
Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. By the way, did you think that Jeff in Finch sounded like Borat?
Slightly. I didn't make that connection.
I did a little bit. Anyway, we're getting way off track here. We're a little rusty. I'm a little rusty. Anything else before we go, Cody? Oh, if you want to reach us, you can email us at podcast@cinesnob.net. Find us on Twitter @cinesnob, Facebook, cinesnob.net, youtube.com/cinesnob. You can watch all these episodes. Anything else, Cody, before we go?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Good to be back. It's getting busy. Got my first award screener, so... You know,
congrats. I didn't get it. Thing.
Yeah, because your mail's all screwed up. That's what you get for moving.
Shouldn't be, because it didn't go to my old address either. So,
oh, well, I don't know. Sorry. All right. On that note, I'm Jared Kingery.
I'm Cody Viafania.
Thank you for listening to the Cine Snob podcast. To read reviews, interviews, and more, visit cinesnob.net. See you next week.